Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And all of it is brought to you today by Simply Safe Home Security. Right now, you can get 10% off your new home security system if you order today, simplysafe.com/ricochet. And David, let's talk about our first martini. It will hopefully be our last Jim Comey martini for a while. He certainly got all the political oxygen on Thursday and in the days leading up to it. I'm sure you had your countdown clock going at your house along with all the cable channels for 48 hours or longer leading up to it. I'm sure that was just consuming the household and everyone in town.
It was kind of nice to walk back into my house after just marinating all day long in Comey. And I mentioned my 16-year-old son said, "What have you been doing?" I said, "Oh, just all Comey all the time." And he said, "Who?" So
that's awesome.
That was nice. That was actually a breath of fresh air.
Oh, that's so great. Yes. We were talking about Sally Quinn, one of the Washington Mavens yesterday, saying that it should be a national holiday because nobody's going to get anything done at all. And like, well, maybe in your circle, the rest of America will be carrying on just fine. Thank you very much. But let's talk a little bit more about Jim Comey, just in the good martini today. The others will be on different subjects. And one of the things, in addition to his legal analysis, as well as his observations about Trump's character and so forth, both which could go good and bad depending on your perspective. He also had quite a bit to say about the media in two different parts of the questioning, both from Republican senators. First, it was Idaho Senator Jim Risch talking to James Comey about specifically a report in the New York Times that came out a few months ago.
I remember you talked with us shortly after February 14th when the New York Times wrote an article that suggested that the Trump campaign was colluding with the Russians. You remember reading that article when it first came out?
I do. It was about allegedly extensive electronic surveillance.
Correct.
Communications. Yes.
And that upset you to the point where you actually went out and surveyed the intelligence community to see whether you were missing something in that. Is that correct?
That's correct. I want to be careful in open setting.
I'm not going to go any further than that.
Okay.
So thank you. In addition to that, after that, you sought out both Republican and Democrat senators to tell them that, hey, I don't know where this is coming from, but this is not the case. This is not factual. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. So again, so the American people can understand this, that report by the New York Times was not true. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, in the main, it was not true. And again, all of you know this, the American people don't. The challenge, and I'm not picking on reporters, about writing stories about classified information is the people talking about it often don't really know what's going on, and those of us who actually know what's going on are not talking about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure the reporters know a lot about what's going on either. David, Oklahoma Senator James Lankford broadened the question about the media a little bit later in the questioning.
You had mentioned before about some news stories and news accounts. Without having to go into all the names and the specific times and to be able to dip into all that, have there been news accounts about the Russian investigation, about collusion, about this whole event, or accusations that as you read the story, you were stunned about how wrong they got the facts?
Yes, there have been many, many stories purportedly based on classified information about lots of stuff, but especially about Russia, that are just dead wrong.
So it's deliciously ironic today, David. You get all these media folks with their big winners and losers from the Comey hearing aftermath here. One of the big losers is the media, who is constantly frothing at the mouth. And time after time after time, they're either getting the whole story or the crux of the story dead wrong.
Yeah. You know, this was good news for America, what Comey just said, because let's recall what that New York Times story was. That New York Times story was and I remember it very, very well because it shocked me when I saw it. And it was that allegedly that Intercepts had shown that Trump campaign officials had repeated, frequent contacts with Russian intelligence officials. Now, that story didn't say that they colluded, but my goodness, that's weird. That's strange. This idea that you would have campaign officials from a major presidential campaign talking with members of Russian intelligence. And then that should be a story that would disturb everybody. And then to hear that in the main it was false, I know for me, when I heard that, I kind of felt a sigh of relief. And then I started to think about, you know, the extent of which there was this an awful lot of concern that were these deep state people leaking classified information. Well, it turns out that they may not have been, that the actual classified information was remaining classified. The actual real story was remaining classified. But instead, reporters were hearing things that just were not true at all. And that raises some disturbing possibilities on every side. I mean, why were reporters trusting these sources, for example? That's a really good question to ask. Who were these sources? What were they, you know, what were their motivations? Were they in good faith passing on information they thought was true? Or were they just flat out spreading disinformation? I mean, yeah, it's in the main, it's good, because I think the worst possible story here is the story that says that a presidential candidate's campaign colluded with Russians. That's a terrible story for the United States of America, not just for, say, Republicans. If that story is not true, then, you know, we've kind of moved this whole thing about this whole debate back into more normal territory of, well, you know, is there individual political corruption involved here, which is a different thing from collusion with a foreign power to impact a presidential election. That's a 9-alarm fire of a scandal. Whether or not the president improperly or corruptly leaned on the FBI director is very, very serious. But it's not in the same ballpark as, you know, collusion with a hostile foreign power.
Let's move on to our bad martini now, David. And let's go across the pond. It's been a rough few weeks, obviously, in Great Britain with the bombing in Manchester and then the multiple terrorist attacks just this past weekend in London. All of that, as well as some other factors, combining to make life pretty miserable politically for Prime Minister Theresa May. Several weeks ago, she called for what are called snap elections in order to get another 5-year term and strengthen the Conservative Party or Tory hold on Parliament as she enters into Brexit negotiations in the coming days here this month. You need 326 seats in Parliament to hold the majority. The Conservatives had that. She obviously wanted to boost it. And then in the end, it didn't happen. In fact, they lost the majority. They're a few seats short of it. 318, I think, is the last count I saw. And so basically, they're working with this party out of Northern Ireland now to cobble together a majority because that party won 10 seats. The Labour Party, which is led by the far, far, far left Jeremy Corbyn, who ought to be nowhere near number 10 Downing Street, did much better than expected, and he's demanding that Theresa May resign. She says the Queen has given her permission to form the government, but there's other Tories who think it's time to push her out in favor of somebody else from the party to lead it after very disappointing election results. David, we need a strong ally. We need a responsible ally in Britain, and the Conservatives there are clearly weakened as a result of what happened on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to defer to the expertise of my colleague, Charlie Cook, who's actually over there now, and his the headline of his piece today in National Review, which I'd urge everyone to read, is a colossal political disaster for the Tories. I mean, I don't pretend to be an expert in British politics, so I'm not going to dive into, you know, the ins and outs of British politics. But it doesn't take an expert to say that this gamble in a snap election, to an extent, I guess, is always a gamble, even if the polling data looks really, really good when you call it, this is a gamble that did not pay off. And the idea, and I don't think that Corbyn will become prime minister. He's highly unlikely to become prime minister. But the idea that a person of that character and temperament could become the leader of our most key ally, our most vital ally, a terrorist sympathizer, quasi-Marxist person with real anti-Semitic tendencies, it's deeply jolting. I as I said, I don't think he'll end up becoming prime minister. Highly unlikely for that to happen. But the fact that we're, you know, even in this, that's even part of the conversation, says that, how shall we put it, that 2016, all the surprises of 2016 keep bleeding on into 2017. Mm-hmm. So I think we're now on month 18 of the year 2016.
It just won't end, David.
Yes, exactly.
in so many different ways. But, well, if you don't know that your political seat is safe in Britain, if you're a member of the Conservative Party, at least you can know back here in the United States that your home is safe. Let's talk about Simply Safe Home Security, because millions of Americans get home security because they want to feel safe when they go to bed at night. And obviously that's important. But keep this statistic in mind. Most home invasions actually occur between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. So if you're one of those people that went to the bar to watch Jim Comey and hopefully get free drinks if Trump tweeted and just be part of the community, that was prime time for folks to break into your house and steal stuff. Because between 10 and 3 is when your family is out and about. So it's possible that while you're breaking for lunch, burglars are breaking in. And while you're doing your best work on the job, they're getting ready to do their worst. Don't spend your workday worrying.
Stop intruders in their tracks with Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe is a completely wireless system that's easy to install. You can build an arsenal for all-day protection in under an hour. With entry sensors, glass break sensors, and a high-definition security camera, you'll know what's going on at home when you're away. There are no long-term contracts, and Simply Safe's around-the-clock professional monitoring is only $14.99 a month.
Great deal. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet to get a special 10% discount off your home security system when you order today. That's Simply Safe, SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. SimpliSafe.com/ricochet, and get that 10% off your new system. David, on to the crazy martini now, and on to a story that you have also written about. So you're the perfect person to comment on this on the Three Martini Lunch today. Given all the focus on Jim Comey, given all the focus on Trump and the investigations and terrorism over the last few days, what we haven't had a lot of time to spend on is this exchange. Bernie Sanders of Vermont, of course, ran for president last year. He was quizzing the nominee for deputy budget director. That's not usually a position that gets a lot of attention, nor most people know who that person is. But the nominee is Russell Vogt. Russell Vogt has been a figure on Capitol Hill for a long time. He used to work with the Republican Study Committee. Pretty solid conservative credentials. He also happens to be an alumnus of Wheaton College in Illinois, which is well known as a conservative school. And it's something that Vogt wrote in defense of Wheaton that got Bernie Sanders all in a lather. Two pretty extensive clips here from this questioning that ought to appall just about every American, regardless of your political view. Here's a part of it.
In the piece that I referred to that you wrote for a publication called Resurgent, you wrote, Muslim, quote, Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation.
And so Sanders kept pushing and pushing about whether that was Islamophobic, whether it was tolerant, whether it was respectful. And Vogt kept talking about how it was consistent with Christian beliefs and how it was consistent with the mission statement and the statement of faith at Wheaton College. And here's how the conversation wrapped up.
In your judgment, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned?
Thank you for probing on that question. As a Christian, I believe that all individuals are made in the image of God and are worthy of dignity and respect, regardless of their religious beliefs. I believe that as a Christian, that's how I should treat all individuals.
And do you think your statement that you put into that publication, they do not know God because they've rejected Jesus Christ, the Son, and they stand condemned, do you think that's respectful of other religions?
Senator, I wrote a post based on being a Christian and attending a Christian school that has a statement of faith that speaks clearly with regard to the centrality of Jesus Christ in salvation.
I would simply say, Mr. Chairman, that this nominee is really not someone who is what this country is supposed to be about.
not someone who this country is supposed to be about. That's pretty orthodox Christianity there, David. I can immediately think of a couple different passages from John. Jesus saying, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. And later saying, he that has the Son hath life, and he that doesn't does not have life. And exclusivity is certainly not exclusive to Christianity. Just about every major religion believes and states that they are the only way to God. And then on the constitutional side, Article 6 of the Constitution says, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. So Sanders seems egregiously out of line here.
Egregiously is an understatement. I mean, you know, what this shows is the wisdom of the founders in putting that provision in Article 6 of the Constitution. Do we want senators acting as theologians, probing the rightness and wrongness of religious points of view? I mean, it was obvious from the questioning that Sanders had absolutely no clue that the witness was advancing completely orthodox, small o orthodox Christianity. I mean, this is a viewpoint broadly shared, particularly by Protestants. And he was reflecting when he was talking about Wheaton College. Wheaton is sort of like the Harvard of evangelical colleges. Its statement of faith is mirrored in the statements of faith of Christian colleges, Christian high schools, Christian churches, Christian organizations all around this country. So is Sanders saying that all of the people who believe in these statements of faith are not what America's about? And I got news for Sanders. There's a lot of other faiths not Christian that have pretty exclusive claims, including the Islamic faith that he was purportedly defending. So if his view is that if a religion has exclusive claims, then those people who believe in those exclusive claims are not what America's about, he's throwing out and excluding the very Muslims that he was purporting to defend in that comment. I mean, it's one of the worst traits you often see in Washington, which is ignorance combined with condescension. So here you had an ignorant man belligerently badgering a knowledgeable witness and doing so in a condescending and dismissive fashion. It was really appalling. It truly was egregious, and it was a blatant violation of the Constitution. Now, Sanders is going to vote however he's going to vote. It's not like you can sue him to get him to change his mind. I mean, this is not the kind of constitutional violation that can be addressed in a court of law, but it's a constitutional violation nonetheless.
It's amazing on so many levels. First of all, apparently Sanders had no problems with this guy in terms of his fiscal viewpoints, because the fact that that came up for a big chunk of the questioning was certainly not on topic. David, obviously this comes at a time when we've got the debates over freedom of conscience for employers, for employees, for business owners, and what sort of events that they'll use their skills towards catering and providing services for and so forth. So what does a moment like this with Bernie Sanders suggest, and I don't want to make it a bigger issue than it might be, about the way Christianity is being treated in the public square?
Yeah, you know, I think it's worth highlighting because Bernie Sanders isn't just some guy, like some random state legislator in Maryland or something like that. This is a guy who was almost, I mean, he was close to becoming the Democratic nominee for president of the United States, and he demonstrated that level of ignorance and contempt for a really standard Christian point of view. I mean, what does that say he thinks about his Christian fellow citizens? I mean, you know, I know Sanders isn't Christian, but his fellow citizen, there are many, many millions of fellow citizens who are Christians who believe as he does. And what does it say about his ignorance of how Christians think of religious liberty? Because, you know, it is people who have exclusive views when it comes to theology who have very inclusive views when it comes to religious liberty, because we know that there is no real religious liberty unless people are able to practice their faith as it's believed and as it's taught. Religious liberty isn't the liberty to all come together in some sort of like milquetoast, can't we all get along, coexist bumper sticker. Real religious liberty is religious liberty that allows people with mutual and very different and competing views of the world to live together, defend each other's liberty, and treat each other with respect. And that's what the witness was talking about. And the fact that Sanders just can't get that, and he was within, you know, a few different primary outcomes from becoming the Democratic nominee, I think it says a lot about where at least a segment of the Democratic Party is on not just religious liberty, but understanding their religious fellow citizens.
Wow. David, on that sobering note, we'll call time for today. Thanks for filling in for Jim today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Always fun.
David French of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Monday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security and get that 10% discount off your brand new home security system when you order today. SimplySafe.com/ricochet. Join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.